All right, if you're anything like me, you hate running out of food on a trip. It's like a big fear. And so I'm a big fan of snacks during an adventure. And one of my absolute favorite go-to snacks are Wonderful Pistachios. You may be familiar with pistachios and the brand Wonderful Pistachios, but if you're not, they are one of the highest protein nuts out there. 1 ounce serving of Wonderful Pistachios is 6 grams of protein. That's 10% of your daily value. It also includes 9 essential amino acids, and they come with a ton of different flavors, varieties. There's a spicy version, there's lightly salted, there's no salted, there's so many. And every time I go on an adventure, I'm not even lying, I take an entire bag with me. And what's cool too, I love having the Wonderful Pistachio in shell, because then that almost gives me something to do and focus on as I'm paddling or biking through the really monotonous parts of the adventure. Every great adventure is going to have plenty of boring moments, and it's nice to have something to do and also something that is giving you some fuel, like Wonderful Pistachios. So they're one of my favorite adventure snacks, favorite road trip snacks, and definitely leave me feeling better than a lot of other snacks you can turn to. So if you want to learn more about how to fuel your next adventure with Wonderful Pistachios, go to WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Hey folks, welcome to the Adventure Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Mason. Today we're throwing it back to 2021 with Laura Youngson, talking about this idea of addressing the lack of media coverage and a lack of specificity and innovation that goes into women's sports a lot of times. If you at all follow college basketball or even professional basketball now, you'll know that women's professional and college basketball had a heck of a year, a heck of a moment. In fact, the women's national championship had more viewers, higher ratings than the men's, first time in ever in college basketball history. And I watched that game. It was really freaking entertaining. And it's cool to see that shift, because historically it's like, well, this isn't viable just because women can't dunk. It's not as athletic, or it's not as, you know, dramatic. They're not as tall, all that stuff. But good basketball is good basketball. Anyway, that ties into today's episode, because Laura saw that same thing with women's soccer. She saw that the gear was just the men's gear, just turned pink and a little smaller, but she knew that a lot more innovation needed to happen. So in order to address this challenge and make women's specific soccer cleats, she decided to climb Mount Kilimanjaro and play a game of soccer with a whole team of international women on top of the mountain, which is just a crazy idea. I love it. I think it's so cool to launch this whole idea called Ida Sports, and it's going strong. It's for sale and distributed all over the U.S. I've seen it everywhere, and it was pretty cool to be able to talk to Laura a few years ago when this was all really getting going and getting started. And what I love about this story is it's taking the medium of adventure sports and making the world a better place, making a positive impact in an area that you care about. We can all do this. You know, obviously, adventure is also amazing and worthwhile for the sake of adventure. But if you've got a reason, got something to do to make it more impactful, go do it. So I think Laura's story is really inspiring. It's a great template for anybody wanting to do something or launch something and have a great adventure doing it. So all the links to learn more about Ida Sports and Laura are in the show notes. Let's go ahead and dive in. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. Yeah, so I always ask this first. Where are you coming from today? Where is home, if it's not, you know, where you're coming from?
Yeah, good question. So I am currently beaming in from Amsterdam in the Netherlands.
Is that where you grew up?
No, but this is where I live now. I grew up in the UK, so, and then I also have lived quite a lot of places around the world, including in Brazil and in Azerbaijan. So I have kind of a mixed bag accent.
What did you grow up doing? Did you grow up playing a lot of soccer or football, or was it other sports? And how did you eventually come around to soccer?
Yeah, I think I had a very active childhood. And I used to play soccer, or football as we call it, only in the garden, really, with my cousins and my brother. And my main kind of sport was I did a lot of ballet and a lot of dancing. I played tennis, pretty much any sport, you name it, and I will have tried it or played for the school team. And it wasn't really until I went to university that some friends were like, hey, we have a team, a football team. Do you want to come play, try out? And I was like, sure, I'll give it a go. Really enjoyed it. And then it's become part of my life. And especially when I've moved around different places, it's been such a good anchor. I always join a football team and get to know people and get to know the language, make some new friends. And it's been this really just, I've got so much joy out of the sport and out of what it brings to be able to be part of that squad, I guess.
It's such a beautiful sport in the sense that for someone like you who's traveled and lived in so many places, you can always count on there being a pretty solid fan base there.
Totally. And I think even from kind of, there's always at least a five-a-side team that you can get involved with, or in, and the surfaces might change, but the game doesn't. So I've played on everything from, like, I guess, cage football in Brazil, which was seven aside, but on these cages and you have AstroTurf underneath, and then to futsal in Australia, which is a really huge sport and really popular there. And in the Middle East, you play, they have a lot of 11 aside, but it feels like you're playing, walking through jelly because it's so warm. So it's a real, it's been great to have these different experiences and see how the game has evolved and taken shape in different places.
And you've also played on mountaintops, which is kind of what you're what in a way famous for now, which is a place that not a lot of people can say they've played. So I'd love to hear from you. You know, here at Athletic Brewing, we are so used to going against the grain, pursuing crazy ideas, that we just resonate with folks like you who also do things like that and also say, you know what, I'm going to go my own way. Tell us what it was like for you with the experience of coming up with the idea to play soccer on Kilimanjaro.
I think it was actually as crazy as it sounds at the beginning. And I mean, looking back, it's hilarious because I literally photoshopped a football pitch onto a picture of the top of Kilimanjaro and was like, yeah, that'll work. And so it took quite a lot of planning, but like early on in the process, having kind of ascertained that, because there were some guys that played a cricket match up there, and I was like, I phoned them up and I was like, hey, so what do you reckon? Could we run? And they were like, yeah, well, we didn't run very much because it's very tiring up there, but yeah, you know, give it a go. Like classic British, like keep calm, carry on. And so it took a little while to plan. And obviously the first few people that we encountered were like, no way, you guys are crazy, don't do that, you'll die. And then gradually we persuaded more and more people to join and be part of the team, because it turns out you need quite a lot of people to do something like that. So we ended up, like, you need two full teams plus substitutes plus referees plus referee substitutes in case the referees don't make it, plus like a whole doctor and medical crew, plus like the people that know about the rules and the pitch, and then coaches and things like that. So we ended up having this really merry band of people from around the world. So we took, I think it was about 35 nationalities with us, which was absolutely incredible. And so we came together with, most people had never met anyone else. And in fact, a few, like I was speaking to someone over the last couple of weeks and they were like, yeah, so I didn't know when I was flying to Tanzania whether this was all a big hoax and I'd just turn up and there'd be no one there to go climb a mountain with. But it worked out. And I think it was amazing to kind of pull everyone together. And then you had this sense of anticipation of doing something that had never been done before, and not knowing if it was going to succeed. And I think that was the incredible part.
So how did you come up with the idea? Why did you do it in the first place?
I think, so it was a kind of a combination of things, of a lot of little frustrations of being a female playing football and experiencing some of the kind of, oh, well, they always think about the men's team, but they don't think about the women's team. And it kind of all built up. I think one of the things I was reading was like, there are more stories about horses than women in the sports pages. And I was like, oh my God, this is so dumb. And also it's not going to change for a while. And I think a number of those thoughts kind of galvanized me at the same time. I was looking around, and then I spotted these people that had played cricket up there, and I was like, wow, wouldn't that be a crazy thing? Like, that would show people that women can literally do anything if you could go and play a match up there, and maybe it would open a conversation that then would allow people to change things. And it sort of started from that frustration space, but then as soon as everyone else came on board, they all brought their own motivations. And I think that really is what made it into a movement that was bigger than just, oh, I'm angry about this. It was actually, we've got a force here. We've got a collective, and we can start to change the agenda. And I think that's been the most fascinating kind of outcome of the whole experience, is seeing how we can have an impact.
So it started with you watching TV on your couch and ended up being this international, you know, endeavor with 60 women to play soccer, including just all the staff and people carrying equipment and just all the logistics. For you, what was the hardest part in taking action? Because that's something we really strive to do here at Athletic, is find a way to start taking action. For you, what were the early steps, and how difficult was it to just get started?
So I think I have a bias to action, and in some cases too much so, in that I probably should think about things before I start going for it. And so it's almost like I end up halfway down a path and then you start realizing how difficult it is. So I think blind optimism is probably a key characteristic of going,
it's a key characteristic.
Yeah, exactly. I think this can work. And then let's work out the details later. So in terms of actually, like, once you start breaking it down, like, yes, it looks on the surface this incredibly hard challenge. And looking back, I was like, wow, how did we manage this? But actually, you break it down and you start finding collaborators. And I think it's really worth mentioning this, because you can't do anything alone. And one of the things I've learned on this journey, and also the IDA journey, is that you have to ask for help. And people are often very willing to help you, and you ask questions, and you, like, some of the hardest stuff was actually getting the goals up to the top of the pitch, which you sort of go, oh yeah, we do need goals to play soccer, right? And I ended up, like, the goals are a whole story in themselves. I ended up driving them. They look like they're in body bags. And I was driving them to this depot to get them on a flight. And then they got stuck in customs. And then we didn't know whether we were going to have them. And eventually they arrived the day before the match was due to be played. And it's all these, like, that's just one example of all the different pieces that had to come together, that ultimately, I think we ended up with, we were very lucky, ended up with quite a lot of lucky things that happened. But also that we'd put in the hard work and the groundwork to make sure that we were covered on contingencies, and we knew that, like, we had some great doctors with us, so that if we had any issues, they were there ready to help out the players. So yeah, it is a challenge, but I think once you've set your mind on doing something, then it's really just working out the ways that other people can help you to achieve that goal.
Tell us about the women that played in the game. Where did they come from, and how many again? 60 total?
Yeah, we had about 60, and some men and women as well. So men, there were a lot of guys that were helping with the film crew, and we had a brilliant doctor, Dr. Dana, he also worked for NASA, and he's currently just spent the coronavirus pandemic in an ER in New York. Just what a magnificent person, who made us feel really, really at home and really welcome on the mountain. So yeah, these women are amazing. They've come from all over the world. So there's Jasmine, who lives in Los Angeles and used to play professional football in Brazil, and is a single mom. And she left her four-year-old at the time at home when she came up the mountain. And she was kind of climbing for all of the women who are moms who have these struggles. And she'd played professional football, but hadn't necessarily made any money off it, hadn't had any good, like, the contracts that she'd been offered turned out to be kind of not legitimate and things like that. So she had her whole story, and she was now coaching women and girls. And then on the other side, Rasha and Saja, who came from Saudi Arabia, who were climbing. And at that point, football just wasn't really an option in Saudi Arabia, and there was no national team, there was no backing. And we've seen even in the last 4 years, a lot of that has changed. And there is now kind of pathways and opportunities for girls to play. But I really like, there are so many incredible women that we'd probably spend the entire podcast talking about everyone.
I can only imagine. And the interesting thing is you got to know them as well going up the mountain, because it was a week just to get to where you were playing the game.
That's right.
I mean, that's a long time to be climbing a mountain. That's a long time to think, a lot of things to make sure go right, and a lot of time to really question, what the heck am I doing?
Yeah, I know. I think it was, the good thing was, as soon as we all met up, we knew we'd do it. And I think there was no question of failure, because the whole group got together and there were just this like badass women from around the world who were all like, no, we're going to do it. Like, we have to. But we took the decision that we'd spend a bit longer climbing the mountain because it made it more likely that more people would reach the top. And so we had this, I'd like to say leisurely stroll up the mountain, but it was still pretty tough. But also there's no phone signal. And so one of the best parts, I think, of the whole trip was actually everyone had to talk to each other. And as a result of that, we spent a lot of time really getting to know everyone's stories and their motivations for climbing, but also what they're planning to do and kind of what drives them and how they fit in into the bigger ecosystem of women's sport and really where we can have an even bigger impact. Because I think at the beginning when we were climbing, we just thought it would be a bit of a one-off. But we realized as soon as we made it and come down that actually there was an opportunity to, everyone was kind of asking, well, what's next? Because they felt so connected to what we were able to do.
Well, that leads me to ask, you know, it's one thing, climb a mountain. For a lot of people, this is the adventure. This is the challenge, is climbing a mountain.
Yeah.
To play a game of soccer. But for you, it was literally the beginning. What is it like for you to go beyond that to achieve the ultimate goal of what you're trying to do?
I think what's been amazing is, as I said, like before we climbed the mountain, like literally no one really knew about us. No one really cared. And then we knew that we were on something kind of halfway up because we'd been on CNN and some other people that were climbing were walking past and they were like, oh my God, you're the women that are going to go and break that like soccer world record. And we were like, oh, wow. Yeah, that's us. We're going to do it. And it was then that we started to see that actually there could be a longevity and there could be a movement that's created out of this. And it really came then from the okay, well, what's next and what's the impact we can have? And we realized that we had a platform upon which we could tell stories, but also women can tell stories in their own words and start working together to fight the, I guess, the systems in their own countries and some of the inequalities that you're experiencing, because across the world, it's interesting how similar a lot of the challenges everyone was facing to a greater or lesser extent, and just finding that group of people and realizing you're not alone. There are other people who are the only female coach in that area, and connecting those people meant so much. And that's been one of the biggest things, is creating this network upon which you can call to start solving some of the challenges that you're facing.
Can you tell a story about what this climb up this mountain did for an individual or for a community after the fact that made you realize, you know, I know you didn't question it before this, but really also just helped confirm this is what I needed to do?
Yeah, I think, one of the most curious stories is a lady called Deepa, who's from Nepal, who, like, the Nepalese Football Association wouldn't let her, we'd invited her to come to Kilimanjaro and they wouldn't let her come. And so she essentially absconded from the army and just joined us in Tanzania. And we were like, wow, this is amazing.
Holy
but
cow.
Didn't speak much English. So we had this incredible communication where we'd use like text emojis to kind of talk about the day and talk about what she was feeling and what we wanted to eat and stuff like that. And I think one of the things that I didn't realize is kind of the impact it would have when she went back to Nepal. And she was kind of front page news. So the fact that she'd come with us and got this world record, it just immediately, she was able to use that to raise the profile of women's sport. And I think now she's one of the football kind of like match commissioners, the people that oversee the matches. She's doing so much for the national team and for the national leagues. And I think she's been able to use it as kind of a way to then open doors and challenge some of the misconceptions in Nepalese society. So it's stories like this that you only really find like 3 or 4 years later now, it is that we're starting to hear again, like a story of someone who this trip has had a profound impact on. And then they've changed their life. I think one of the biggest things is almost everyone either got a promotion or changed their job or took a step up in some shape or form. And just that confidence from having done something like this that was incredibly hard and very difficult to achieve really changed how a lot of people approach the world.
I remember watching you say in one of the videos about the experience that it makes you feel like you can do anything now.
Yeah.
And that translates to the next interview you have, the next job you have, or coming home and, you know, shooting for your next goal. That's incredible.
Yeah. It's and also, yeah, I think when you look back, I kind of tried to bottle that feeling of, well, this is what I can achieve when I put my mind to it. And it's quite remarkable, really. And it's that, well, why don't you try and do something hard? Because even if you fail, you'll have brought so many people along the journey that one of them is going to succeed. And I think that's where I've perhaps seen the broader mission of what we're doing, that even by standing up and attempting to do something, it inspires other people to have a go as well.
It's something that you hear and that you might say, yeah, that's true. But until you experience it, it's hard to know, like know in your heart. But for you to have taken the action from your couch to sit, you know, be on top of Kilimanjaro playing a game of soccer is just unbelievable. What was the elevation? Can you tell us that?
Yeah, it was, I can't remember what it is in feet. And I know you guys do feet, but 5,715 meters. So yeah, there's like, it's about 18,000, something like this. And it's just below the summit. There's a crater, like a volcanic lava crater. So you're playing in black sand. But the brilliant thing for me is, so you do this horrible climb where you start at like midnight, 1 a.m. and it's pretty much vertical. And everyone was hating it. And they were all going past each other, kind of giving high fives, like, you can do this. And they're going past me going, I hate you. Why have you brought me? We got to the first bit where you pop into the crater, and everyone was kind of so relieved, and the sun had come up and it was dawn, and that was amazing. And for me, just I came over that rise and I saw, because the team had been there a bit before building the pitch, and I saw them kind of setting up, and I had this sense of relief of like, well, we're gonna do it now, because it was all the pieces were in place. And I think before it had been kind of like, oh my God, are we going to get the goals? How's this working? What if so-and-so's sick? All of these kind of worries. And then by the time we reached this crater, I knew for certain that the whole group that we were with, they would just make it happen. And that we almost had the record in the bag even before we'd played, because the right ingredients were there.
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that helped make this show possible. Get in on the playoff action and win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks. As you and the world's best players take the game to a new level during basketball's postseason, Prize Picks has something for every fan. From basketball, hockey, to League of Legends, and everything in between. You can even pick individual players, LeBron, Caitlin Clark, Connor McDavid, Jude Bellingham, all in the same entry. Prize Picks is the best way to get in on the action of sports in more than 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, and Georgia. I'm a big basketball fan personally, so that's where I'd focus my attention with Prize Picks. So if you want to try it and get in on the action, download the app today and use the code ASP for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today, Prize Picks, and use the code ASP for Adventure Sports Podcast for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode. So if it's you know, a little over 18,000 feet, and the story you told about the individual that lives in Nepal, I don't know if you are ever shooting for a second iteration of this, but there's a mountain in Nepal that's much, much taller than Kilimanjaro. And
funnily enough,
I don't know if a soccer game on Everest is ever in the works.
Oh, there might be. There's one in South America that I've got my eye on that would indeed break our record. And I feel like that could be a nice symmetry. Like we've gone on this bit of a world record breaking habit or spree. And I sense that could be a nice ending to our project, where we go and break our own record and then retire.
It's not about the record. It is about the record, but it's not. It's about raising, you know, elevating. You literally achieved your goal of elevating these women, the next tier up in their career, or in, you know, some sort of government or role in the sport, getting closer and closer to equality.
I think that's it. You've hit the nail on the head. It's about the record, but it's so much more than the record. The record is the mechanism or the vehicle to start the conversation. And I think that's always the way we've looked at kind of how can you get more people to think about this and perhaps change mindsets so that, like, the kids of today don't have to have these same struggles. They can just get on and play.
Speaking of playing, after this experience, it led you to Ida Sports, co-founding Ida Sports. Can you tell us about that? What is different about Ida Sports? What do you do? And the goal, what is the goal of Ida Sports?
Yeah, so I always hate wearing kids' boots when I play soccer, and I have to because I have, I'd say, like, normal feet, but in the industry, class was small. And on the mountain, I actually got to chat to a lot of these professional players who played US women's national team, been to the Olympics, that sort of thing. And I realized that they're all wearing men's and kids' boots as well. And I was like, wow, this is dumb. And I went home and kind of researched in the medical journals and realized that men's and women's feet are different, which firstly blew my mind. And then looked around and looked at the bigger brands which weren't doing it, and kind of looked at the fact that women were still really treated as second-class citizens when it comes to equipment and professional equipment. And so set out to make a shoe and make a shoe company. And so I cooked up the first shoe in my kitchen, which I feel like I followed the shoe dog Bible. Make shoe in kitchen, tick. Sell shoe out of back of car, tick. You know, it's really how it's happening. And from that kind of beginning, essentially I've made a women's soccer cleat and brought it to market. And we're now kind of, we started in Australia and now we're exporting into the US and into the UK and really changing the narrative on women's sport. And I think in similar way to the world records, it's about a shoe, but it's also about so much more. And it's about, can you change a system that currently has sports stores that have men's and kids sections and those sections for women? Can you change design principles so that you actually, instead of taking a shoe and doing what the industry does, which is shrink it and pink it, can you talk about inclusive design and start designing with the customers in mind and with these players in mind? So yeah, from the mountain, it's sort of given birth to this this entire shoe company, which is definitely not the way I thought my life would go, for sure.
Tell us about some of the challenges with changing the perception now in a merchandising world. You know, it's one thing, like we mentioned before, to climb a mountain, this amazing adventure, it's fun. Fighting in the world of merchandise and apparel is got to be a totally different animal altogether. Tell us about how you maintain the drive to keep pushing forward. Yeah.
I think what's been fascinating with this whole experience is that I spent a couple of years thinking I was crazy for seeing that men's and women's feet were different and being like, hey guys, I think we should have a women's shoe. And yet all the signs from the bigger brands were telling me that it shouldn't exist. So unisex sizing, well, our shoes are unisex, which means everyone can wear them. And looking at what there was already on the market. And it wasn't until we really spent a lot of time with players and listening to their problems and listening to what they want that I was then became pretty confident that actually we're ahead of the curve. And what we're seeing and what we're experiencing is there is a real need for it, and that players want this. And I guess that the brands haven't really catered to this market. That market's been underserved and underrepresented for a long time. So I think one of the biggest challenges is actually education of players themselves. So often women are like, yeah, well, this is just what football boots feel like. They're supposed to be uncomfy, right? And you're like, no, actually, football boots can be incredibly comfy. And it's that you've probably just got normal feet, but you're putting them into a shoe that's made for an entirely different body type. So there's been a lot of definitely a lot of resistance from the market for sure. And from some of the retailers, although some of them are really, they get it and they understand that women want other products. But I think the thing that I saw was that this revolution that we'd experienced in running and running shoes really hadn't translated to other team sports and turf sports. And so there's just this gap in the market. And well, for me, it makes good economic sense, but it's also like the right thing to do. So being able to build a business in this space is really, really rewarding as well.
I can't tell you how much we hear that phrase here at Athletic. Non-alcoholic beer. Who would have ever thought? You know what I mean? So yeah. It's you're exactly doing this. You're doing the exact same thing, just in the world that you know and in the world that you're passionate about. That's so cool. It's so great to know we're not the only crazy ones out there.
For sure, for sure. And it's nice when people start to cotton on and you're like, yes. And you resist the urge to do I told you so. You just show them your revenues. And that's fine. But it's I think you're totally right. The non-alcoholic world, that there's a lot of prejudice from people who think it has to be one or the other. Whereas I think a lot of people are looking for a product like this, and you can just ignore what the market says the traditional industry, ignore what traditional industry says and focus on your customers, because they're the ones that are the most important.
They're buying the products. It's what they want.
That's it.
Well, if you don't mind, I'd love to move into the rapid fire round.
Sure.
Here we go. Rapid fire number one. What would you say you're most curious about right now outside of your career?
Whoa, that's a good one. Like pretty much everything.
Just a curious person, huh?
Yeah, very much so. If I was going to give you like a little snippet into what I'm curious about right now. So I'm learning loads about systems thinking. So how we are interconnected and looking at things like, there's an amazing lady from the US called Donella Meadows, who was one of the foremost pioneers of the fact that the earth can't hold, there are limits to growth, right? We shouldn't be chasing growth at all costs, because the earth doesn't have those kind of resources. So one of the things I'm really keen on understanding is how do we fit into the system and how do we make a system that fits for all? So looking at that. But on the other side, most recently I've been doing some projects like distressing copper. So how do those chemical processes take place, and understanding what it is that you can use to create beautiful artwork, and how you can turn that into kind of something that's in your house. And then I've been cutting up shoes again, which seems to be a bit of a habit of mine, because I'm really curious as to what they've put in our shoes, and understanding the construction and how they're made. So honestly, I just love learning. If there's something to kind of figure out, I normally spend a weekend going down a wormhole of deep knowledge, and I'm sure it's going to be useful in the future. all things are kind of useful, but it is fun to learn lots of new stuff.
Really great answer. I love it. Makes you feel better about being a type B, non-specialized person.
So, yeah.
All right. So what's your proudest achievement outside of what we've been talking about, what you're doing with work and also the climb?
I think, I had a son about 16 months ago, and really, I didn't expect him to have such a massive impact. And everyone tells you that they will, but he's been such a joy to kind of see grow up, and has really fundamentally changed how I see the world and like how he gets excited by things that are new. And I'm like, oh wow, I never even thought about the world like that. And it's just been so cool to experience that with him. And I'm actually really excited to see what he'll do. I have a genuine deep curiosity for watching him grow up and understand the world.
Wow. This is a great conversation. I have a 20-month-old son as well. And same thing. I was apprehensive, like, oh gosh, am I going to be me anymore?
And yeah.
I have been a little bit dumbfounded by how much I enjoy it. There's no question,
It's definitely added something to my life that I didn't know I was missing. I think that's the only way I can really describe it, that I thought it would be a subtractive or reductive experience, but it's been so additive. It's just brought a beautiful little bit of chaos and hilarity. I find him hilarious. He sits in a drawer and shuts himself in it. Like, who would do that? He sticks like random clothing on his head. And you're like, oh, mate, what are you doing? It's brilliant.
That is awesome. It's so good to hear too. I didn't know if you don't know if this experience is universal or what, but you're very quotable. You say a lot of little things that I'm like, oh, I got to remember that. That's great.
Do you want to hear a really funny one?
Sure.
We made a film on Kilimanjaro and it's just in the process of getting released and distributed. But one of the funniest things was I got interviewed just after the match, and I only found this out like the day later when they were like, hey, we're going to do a little interview with you. Now, don't worry about whatever you said yesterday. We'll just take some new quotes. And I was like, did we chat yesterday? And they were like, yeah, straight after the match. And I was like, oh. Anyway, turns out I was like super out of it, that like high altitude. I was like, I was a space cadet. And basically, there's this great footage of me. And I'm like, at the top of the mountain, they're like, tell us about it, how it was. And I was like, you've just got to dream big and live bigger.
Wow.
It's like hilarious slogan that I don't even remember saying.
That's really good. I've never heard it. Rapid fire number three. This might be obvious. This might not be. I want to hear from you. Biggest goal not yet achieved.
Ooh, so many goals. Today's goal is that I saw that ESA, the European Space Agency, is opening applications to be an astronaut. So, hey, you got to apply to that. Who doesn't want to be an astronaut, right? That's today's goal. But I think big goals for me, my dreams just keep getting bigger. So each time I do something, I'm like, whoa, maybe we could do this instead. So I don't know, something pretty wild, but I'm open to them getting crazier dreams.
You don't know what it is yet, but you're open to just dreaming as big as possible and living bigger, apparently. So there you go. All right. So number four, do you have a hobby that folks don't know about? I might have should have asked this with the other question, but do you have a hobby that you pursue that you don't really talk about or share that you have?
I do actually do a lot of woodworking, which sounds a bit grandma-ish, but I really enjoy it, and it steps me away from a computer. And each year I kind of have one project that I work on. So one year I built a desk, and last year I built some coat hooks, which took literally the entire year to build because it was a slow process with a kid. But I really enjoy being able to create something from nothing. So I'm always picking up little tree stumps and things to kind of sand them into beautiful, beautiful pieces of furniture.
To wrap it all up, our slogan here at Athletic Brewing is brew without compromise, because that's what it takes. That's what it takes to succeed as a non-alcoholic brewery. You have to be just at your best all the time to even try, attempt to make it. And for you, it's the same way. What does it mean to you to live without compromise?
So I'll answer that in a minute, but all I can think of right now is the best pun, which is you guys are brew without compromise, and maybe Ida is shoe without compromise.
There you go.
We exist on puns and gifts in our company. I think living without compromise, I think you're pursuing goals, not at the detriment of other people, but perhaps in the face of challenges and criticism, and knowing that it is the right thing to do, and kind of pulling the world and the market to your point of view, and understanding that you can make the world a better place. It's pursuing something in the face of resistance. And I think the more you do it, the more people rally to your cause, and you start to see that together you can make a big difference. And without compromising your values and your ideals.
First of all, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to us that you choose to listen to this show. If you'd like to help us further, you can leave a review on iTunes, share us with your friends, your family. It goes a long way to grow in the show. You can also support us financially through patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. Link is in the show notes. And also, if you have an idea of who could be a good guest for the show, we're always looking for people to tell their story about the outdoors or adventure. So if you know someone, please reach out. Email us at info@adventuresportspodcast.com. And until then, get out there and have some fun.